Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Kachit Kurunam Paramasurino. Brahmasayaste sukhamangasuri
Yo
vai svasinam pitrivat dadati Varan vadanyo varatarpanena Kachit kurunam paramasurinam Bhamasayaste sukhamangasuri Yovai svasinam pitrivat dadati Varan vadanyo varatarpanena Kachit,
weather,
Kurunam, of the Kurus,
Paramaha,
greatest,
Suresh,
well-wisher, Na,
our,
Pamaha, brother-in-law.
Saha,
he,
asti,
is,
sukham,
happy,
hunger,
o Uddhava,
shauri,
Vasudev,
ya,
one who,
vai,
certainly,
swastrinam,
of the sisters.
Pitriva,
like a father.
Dadati,
gives.
Varan,
everything desirable.
Vadanya,
munificent.
Vara,
wife.
Tarpanena,
by pleasing.
Translation.
Please tell me whether the best friend of the Kurus, our brother-in-law Vasudev, is doing well. He is very munificent. He is like a father to his sisters, and he is always pleasing to his wives.
Purport.
Lord Krishna's father, Vasudev, had 16 wives, and one of them named Pauravi, or Rohini, the mother of Baladev, was the sister of Vidura. Vasudev, therefore, was the husband of Vidura's sister, and thus they were brother-in-law. Vasudev's sister Kunti was the wife of Pandu, Vidura's elder brother, and in that sense also, Vasudev was brother-in-law to Vidura. Kunti was younger than Vasudev, and it was the duty of the elder brother to treat younger sisters as daughters. Whenever anything was needed by Kunti, it was munificently delivered by Vasudev due to his great love for his younger sister. Vasudev never dissatisfied his wives, and at the same time he supplied the objects desired by his sister. His special attention for Kunti because she became a widow at an early age. While inquiring about Vasudev's welfare, Vidura remembered all about him and the family relationship.
Om Jnanatimirandrasya Kirmana Salakya Chakshuram Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Chaitanya Manobhistam Apitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Pada Kamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavam Sa Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sagunaranganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Vanitasi Visakam Vitam Sa Hey Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinavando Jagatpate Gopesa Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Kovangi Radhe Vrindavaneswari Visavanu Sutade Pranamani Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Thirunyata Sakripa Sindhu Vyayivacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Sri Vasani Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare So, Vidura
is meeting Uddhava.
And Vidura is of course certainly interested in all the gurus, all the great personalities, Vasudev and so on. And he's asking about many. When we are looking, he's asking in the next verse, he's asking about Pradyumna, he's asking about Ugrasena, he's asking about many personalities. And one is understanding that actually Vidura, although he's asking about these various family members, his real interest is Krishna. He's actually wanting to ask about Krishna, because really Vidura's mind is completely focused on Krishna. Vidura had made a great pilgrimage, and Vidura was hearing from Uddhava. Uddhava is an extraordinary personality, because Uddhava, he was receiving so many personal instructions from Krishna himself. Just as we are having the Bhagavad Gita, we are also having the Uddhava Gita as part of Srimad Bhagavatam in the 11th canto. And this Uddhava Gita is very significant because it is spoken to Uddhava by Krishna himself. Thus, it has complete authority, whatever is spoken there. And Uddhava is asking many, many relevant questions. He asks questions about the intricate codes for Varnashram, and Krishna is personally explaining. Thus, we find many important subject matters described in the discussions between Krishna and Uddhava. Then it is said that when Krishna swadamo pakati tarana ginani bisaha kalunasta brisa bisa purana kudanunditaha, when Lord Krishna was leaving this abode, and when he was moving on to his next destination, Dharma and Gyan accompanied the Lord, and it is said that at that time Uddhava also wanted to just leave this world. He said, what is the point of staying here now? And Krishna said, no, you must stay. You must stay. Because you have heard from me, so at least someone should represent me. So Uddhava was specifically there to represent Krishna. And then when it was arranged that Vidura was coming to Uddhava to hear from him, Vidura then understood that actually Krishna especially arranged it for him, that Uddhava was remaining behind to instruct him. It is a fact that Vidura was the main person to hear from Uddhava, and thus Vidura became overwhelmed with transcendental love, because he thought Lord Krishna had thought of me. Still, Vidura is asking about all the different great devotees of the Lord, who are also dear to him. His interest in these various personalities is not mundane. It is a spiritual interest. Thus, devotees are not only focusing on Krishna, they're also maintaining relationships with the devotees of Krishna. It is stated that the Kanista Adhikari can only see the deity in the temple, and he doesn't see the devotees. But a devotee must appreciate all the devotees of Krishna equally so. And thus, the relationships with the devotees are also very significant. In these relationships, one has to invest. It's more difficult in a way, because whatever Krishna is doing, how could one ever question it? How could one ever, in any of Krishna's actions, we simply have to accept perfect, whatever he does. Right? He steals, it's perfect. That whatever Krishna does, there is no external judgment on Krishna. But with devotees, it's different. You may think, well, you know, here he's following Krishna nicely, here he's not following nicely. So with devotees, it's more difficult. Because Krishna, we simply accept, but in relationships with devotees, we agree, we disagree. This is how we exist with one another. And sometimes disagreements are transcendental. We also see that different devotees may have different opinions, and they have transcendental agreements. Both are transcendental, and yet they are disagreeing about the absolute truth. That is the nature of Jiva, due to his infinitesimal nature. Because the living being is not omniscient as the Supreme Lord. Thus, the living being, even although he may be perfect, still there can, on the material plane, there can be mistake. Just like that point came up in relation to Srila Prabhupada, whether Prabhupada ever made mistakes. And Prabhupada, of course, quoted the verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, which I don't remember the Sanskrit right now. But it is a verse which states that there are no mistakes in the sayings of self-realized souls. So, that is very interesting. And yet, the point was raised, but sometimes it appears that the pure devotee is making mistakes. When Prabhupada was walking on the beach, Burijan is writing in his diary, Life with the Perfect Master, I think it's called. He is writing how they were walking on the beach, and Prabhupada saw a scorpion, and everyone else saw it, it was a crab. Big thing, scorpion, crap. Right? Then, if he can make that mistake, then can he make other mistakes? So, not much later, the same theme was sort of still there in the background, and it came up. And then the question was asked to Srila Prabhupada personally, this now in America, whether a pure devotee could make mistakes. Prabhupada said, no, he doesn't make mistakes. Everything is perfect. But Srila Prabhupada, it seems that sometimes a pure devotee may remember something wrong, a name wrong, or something like that. Prabhupada said, that's not a mistake. That is material. And when we say that the pure devotee doesn't make any mistake, it means in his understanding of Krishna consciousness, of Krishna, he makes no mistake about what is the goal of life. He makes no mistake about what is devotional service and so on like that. Material things may sometimes make some mistakes, but not Krishna. There's no such thing. Krishna cannot make a mistake. He cannot mix up names as we can. He cannot mix up phone numbers, because Krishna is perfect. Krishna is omniscient. Krishna is all-knowing. And when Krishna apparently makes a mistake, then it is Yogamaya that arranges it. Because otherwise, there's no question of Krishna ever making a mistake. Thus, the relationship with Krishna is easy in the sense that one accepts, but with a devotee, one thinks, well, but I don't agree.
So that's is the difficulty in relationships with devotees. But we still respect. So we may respectfully disagree. And that is the art, even in relationships amongst transcendental devotees, there may be opinions and sometimes disagreement. That is all right. But it is different than the material disagreement, where there is like total, outright attack, destroy. Amongst Vaishnavas, everything is always respectful and always gentle. It remains gentle. Of course, there can be also disagreement about matters that are not transcendental. Then Prabhupada, in the face of Maya, could be very strong. Rascals, nonsense, and use such kind of words. And we see that with our acharyas also. For example, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he glorified the Bhagavatam commentary of Sridhar Swami. There's an incident in Chaitanya Charitamrita where Vallabharacharya came and had written his own commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam and wanted to present it to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he said that, "I've written a commentary which is better than the commentary of Sridhar Swami." I disagree with him on several points. So then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Whoever disagrees with the Swami is a prostitute." In this case, he used the Bengali version of the word Swami, which doesn't just mean sannyasi, but also refers to husband. So a wife who disagrees with the Swami is a prostitute. So whoever disagrees with the Swami is a prostitute. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very strongly endorsed the commentary of Sridhar Swami. Now, this commentary, the interesting part of this commentary, everybody claims that this commentary is theirs. The Mayavadis, they also say, yes, 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 this is our commentary. Because there is some Mayavad in the Bhavartha Deepika commentary of Sridhar Swami. So how is this? Some are even arguing, does Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have sympathy for Mayavad? Much more than his later biographers who try to make him out against Mayavad, but actually, and they say Krishna's Kaviyas try to make him out against Mayavad, but to prove that he endorsed Sridhar Swami, proves that he was actually had a leaning towards Mayavad. That's of course total nonsense. Then we see Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami in his Sandarbhas is also commenting on the Bhavartha Deepika. And he just takes out the older verses that deal with Mayavad, and he says that Sridhar Swami sometimes was giving Mayavad type of explanations of Bhagavatam to attract the Mayavadis. But actually, of course, he himself was not adhering to this. It was just a preaching strategy. And he said, because the actual Vaishnava view is, of course, and then Jiva Goswami chops up these Mayavadi explanations to total pieces. He smashes them. But he never smashes Sridhar Swami. He's always like very respectful in the Sandarbhas to Sridhar Swami. And he actually uses Sridhar Swami all the time for his in his Sandarbhas as like one of his most quoted authorities. But he smashes his Mayavad, but at the same time says that was his preaching strategy, and we fully respect Sridhar Swami as a Vaishnava. So in this way he resolves it. He will not let him get away with philosophy that is not bona fide, and yet he's not going ad hominem for a personal attack. He leaves the prestige of Sridhar Swami intact. So we see the complexity of Vaishnava dealings and how
all these considerations are to him.
How careful. It's interesting to see that. Because we are more, our Western culture is not so refined, right? It's either you're okay or you're off. It's sort of like that.
One of the two, you know, okay, he's all right, or smash it, you know, go for it. But the Vedic culture is more
more refined.
The Vaishnava culture. Anyway, so in relationships with Vaishnavas, there is a lot of appreciation, and we are specifically thinking in that way. It's here in the material world that we are learning. We are learning. It's a learning curve. It is a big change from our previous relationships. And somehow or other, we must learn to exist in the community of Vaishnavas. Because in the spiritual world, the community of Vaishnavas is very tight. There is no separation in between the Vaishnavas. The Vaishnavas are closely, are very close knit in the spiritual world. Yes, there may be different groups externally, that may be true, competing groups of gopis who are trying to favor Krishna, but ultimately there is appreciation for any service done. So it is of a different nature. Basically, the devotees are all functioning on deeper appreciation of one another for their service. So we have to develop such relationships. We have to. That can only come if we value devotional service. The more we value devotional service, the more we will value those who are engaged in devotional service. And then we can overlook their character. Characters. Everyone has a character. That is to be overlooked. If the service is important, and we see that the person is dedicated to service, why would we worry so much about a little thing in his character? Not that everyone has something in his character. But look at the glory of his activity doing this wonderful devotional service. And in that way, the more we value devotional service, the more we can appreciate the Vaishnava naturally, and naturally overlook the shortcomings in his character. And consider them as the rabbit on the moon, as Prabhupada is talking about, the spot on the moon. That is not even discussed. The moon is used constantly as an example of effulgent beauty, and someone who makes a big thing about the spot on the moon is considered to be a sour grapes type of person. He's small-minded. So the more we begin to respect devotional service to Krishna, the more we appreciate the transcendental potency of the mercy of Krishna, and how amazing that is, and the more we're overwhelmed by that, the more we will appreciate anyone who is doing devotional service. And all the service they have done. And then instead of looking at a person through his character, we look at the person through the service that he has done. And that is the Vaishnava approach. And that is nice, if we look at people like the service they have done. Yeah. Then we get, then our mutual tolerance increases a lot. These are just some reflections, my personal reflections here early in the morning. It's not like that I'm thinking myself about how to appreciate Vaishnavas, because it's it's natural that amongst people we are experiencing differences, and sometimes large differences. You know, we all do things in a different way, and sometimes we really think, why do you have to do it like this? That, and can, you know, it can start as soon as someone comes in the door. Why do you have to open the door this way? Not so loud, or, you know, or so obvious, or here I am, or... There are ways of opening the door that are already too much. But then, some people can, in this way, agitate our mind so easily. But the more we see through the service, the more all these things are becoming just, it's fine. Or, this one walks like an elephant. This one sings like a crow. That one is a little bit of a controller. That one is a little bit of a this and a that. And yes, aren't we all something? Yes, we are, actually. But somehow or other, we're all serving Krishna, and that is very, very nice. That is the one thing. And gradually, as we serve Krishna, more and more good qualities come out. And they do come out. And we also see that. Yeah. And we can see devotees, ultimately, they are there. Devotees are meant to support each other. And devotees are meant to serve Krishna together and assist each other in spiritual life in this way. Yeah, so devotee relationships is a very interesting theme. We can do a lot. Here we are in practice. We are in this material world because we are fallen, because we are contaminated by Ichha Dvesa, Ichha Dvesa Samutena Dvanda Mohena Bharata. It is these two we are deluded by lust and envy. These two are to be purified. And we are attacked by both again and again. But of course, by the mercy of Srila Prabhupada, we do not desire these things anymore, and we thus leave them. Although they still attack the six enemies of the mind, so they are there amongst these six enemies, and thus we are here practicing to rise above, practicing to become very generous in our dealing with others. Very much like the last sentence of the Trinadapi Sumichina verse, to offer all respects to others, and especially like it that it's not only restricted to Vaishnavas, but to all, respect to all others. That is quite something, even respect to in dealings with anyone. So respect means that at least we give everyone some room to exist. That is the beginning of respect. Respect means that we are looking for some good quality in everyone, something. So this attitude of respect is something that we must really cultivate in this life, in a spirit of practice. Now we don't have it. We should not think that I am all right. The first principle of Vaishnavism is to think that he's not all right. The other day, someone asked me, what is the difference between Hinduism and Vaishnavism, and well, I came up with an answer, and that is that a Hindu thinks that he knows everything, and a Vaishnava thinks he doesn't know anything. Yeah? Yes, 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 Swamiji, yes, yes, we know all that. Yeah, yeah, we know all that. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah. I'm not attacking here, you know. All I'm saying is just like that, but it is a barrier, actually. If we know everything, how can we learn anything? And we are in this world to learn. So Vaishnava must say no. No matter how learned he is, he must still say no. I don't know. I actually don't know anything. And if you really think about it, even with all the learning, we don't know anything. No. Because if you just ask deep enough, we don't know anything. No. We may be able to recite the whole Bhagavad Gita, but still we haven't seen Krishna. No. So what do we know, really? Do we know Krishna? What does he look like? We have all these pictures of Krishna, and they all look different to me. No. Which Krishna is the real Krishna? What does he really look like? No. Which artist has it right? We don't know. We don't know. Sort of. Some paint in bright blue, some paint in blackish. Yeah. What is this color? Krishna. Who knows? Who really knows? We can say Shyam, Shyam, Shyam. Yes, he's like a rain cloud. But even the rain clouds have so many different colors. Yeah. I mean, I've seen all kinds of colors in my travels. What do we know? What do we know? Lord Panditji, what do we really know? That is the question. So as Vaishnavas, we always appreciate that we came to this material world because we turned away from Krishna, and thus we became covered over. Avritam jnana mithe na duṣparena nareṇa cha. And affected by lust, and thus avritta, we became covered. So in this covered condition, we spent this life trying to improve ourselves. I learned that from one devotee who joined in Vrindavan. He was a boy from England. He came, and I was the one to interview him for joining the temple. So I asked him different questions, and at one point I asked him, well, why do you want to join? Why do you want to be a devotee? He said, he was a mathematician. He said, well, I have calculated it and thought about it. And he said, I've calculated it, and I came to the conclusion that I want to use this life to improve myself. I was impressed, of course. I said, wow, this guy's calculated it. How did he calculate it? I don't know how he calculated it. It was a mathematician. They have ways that go beyond the capacity of ordinary mortals like myself. Anyway, he calculated it. Someone rather thought about it and weighed all the things and finally came to the conclusion, I want to improve myself. So it's a nice meditation. Because as long as we have that meditation, then at least there is still some work to do. Then we are not finished yet. Then we still... And time is running out. Time is not that plentiful in this life. Time is running out, and thus there is still something to do to improve ourselves. So I think in these areas of developing proper respect for all others in the true sense is something we have to develop. And of course, especially at home, in the Vaishnava relationship. All right, I'll leave it like that. If there are questions or comments, that is cool. I know I come off. If you say it so sudden, questions and comments.
talk for 30 seconds more, unless there is a question. Yes.
Because both were obviously perfect transcendental personalities, so how can you take sides? Right? I mean, this one's right, that one's right, but then you're going to say one is wrong and make offenses. No, better not to take sides. Osa writes, of course, when there's disagreement amongst transcendental personalities, if one of those personalities is our spiritual master, we will take the side of our spiritual master. Not in the sense that we will necessarily disagree, like, yes, 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 we also start arguing with that other person, but we'll follow our spiritual master. That we do. So we're always on the side of our spiritual master. But even if someone disagrees with him, all right, we will respectfully accept this is also an advanced Vaishnava, so he may have a different opinion. Very nice. Of course, I will follow my spiritual master. So whatever, the whole thing is, the main principle is, one should not disrespect any senior Vaishnava, and be careful to about that. So even in opinions, we must be careful, and thus we must learn to kind of we have opinions. It's natural, and maybe Krishna inspires us also to have opinions. Who knows? So it's not just that we should not have opinions, but we should also, we keep our opinions, but we must express our opinions always with respect to other Vaishnavas. Sometimes we may also change our opinions if we hear good arguments. The essence in disagreement amongst Vaishnavas is to remain very respectful. When the disagreement is between Advaita Acharya and Nityananda, it's pretty clear that we're dealing with, like, who we're dealing with, two personalities. When the disagreement is between two devotees in our own community, then it becomes more difficult, because we don't see them exactly like Advaita Acharya and Nityananda. But the same principle applies. We must remain sensitive, respectful, and not respectful means also not to publicly embarrass someone because he has a different opinion. Say, well, okay, I have a different opinion on this matter, but anyway, well, he has his opinion, and well, I respect that, you know, and then also sort of really respecting it. So it is difficult. On our level, on the level of Vaishnava Chaya Nityananda, it's crystal clear. But on our level, not at all. Yeah. And thus sometimes we make mistakes. And if we do make mistakes, then if we later on feel well, maybe I should have dealt with it different. Then it's nice if we make up and say, oh, maybe I was a little too strong on this point. Maybe I should. There's no harm in trying to be sensitive to
to the weight of others' opinions.
In Krishna consciousness, there's no harm. Anyone else?
Okay, you see the character also, but naturally sometimes if the character becomes too disturbing, then you know it may disturb the service. Yeah. If someone is outright dishonest and filling his pockets, then it's obviously that the character is becoming a problem. Right? And saying that a person who's just trying to be a devotee, who's trying to serve Krishna, who's remaining within the principles of prescribed behavior, and then has some rough edges in his dealings, maybe a little bit too much, that's what I was referring to, a leaning a little bit too quickly angered, a little bit too stubborn, a little bit too pushy, a little bit too withdrawn, a little bit like that. You know, we may see some qualities in a person that we think, well, you know, this is not always perfect for the service of Krishna. Yeah. We don't even see it. We don't care. Yeah, these are the little things. That's what happens. But if he begins to deviate from spiritual standards, then of course we'll have to speak up and say, probably this is not broken. Yeah. That's enough. Old question. Cannot go. Yeah.
That's their misfortune. It's not that it's good. It's a misfortune. I'm so misfortunate that due to my circumstances I couldn't go to the Dhamma for 20 years. I wish I could have gone every year out of those 20 years, but I was so unfortunate that I couldn't go. One has to have a strong desire. Well, the temple is certainly representing the Dhamma, because Krishna brings the Dhamma with him. But then, in the holy Dhamma itself, Krishna reveals the transcendental nature of the Dhamma in so many ways. So if you just go there and you go and you try and you look for Krishna and you serve and try to serve Krishna in the Dhamma. Try to get closer to Krishna in the proper way, by chanting, by serving, by hearing. And in the Dhamma, Krishna will reveal himself in so many ways. Thus, you know, the treasures that you can get in the Dhamma are just extraordinary. So, it's worth going. I said that comes from appreciating the service. You know, if you have a lot of appreciation, then it's easier to forgive, no?
I mean, if I see that somebody has done so much service, I'm remembering that. Then even if, you know, in the prasadam queue he put an elbow in my ribs, then I will sort of like say, well, anyway, let him go first. He's done so much service, I can forgive. But if some guy who hasn't done any service comes and puts an elbow in my ribs, I'm sort of like, hey. There's a line here. You get the idea? Maybe my example is a little poor, but the principle of seeing the service someone done is fairly appreciated. It's not easy to do all that service. And then, you know, we know, we're trying to do some service ourselves. So somebody's done a lot. That's quite something. So such a person can get away with something. Dear to Prabhupada, dear to Krishna.
Thank you.
I see. Well, the service is to Krishna, and Krishna is pleased with that service. So, the service is not ordinary. It's a big thing. People do so much service, and they are serving Krishna, and they try to please Krishna, and Krishna is pleased with that service. But when I see you, I'm thinking, oh, nice, he's still on the altar here after so such a long time. But, I mean, it sort of automatically makes me favorably inclined. If I see a different pujari on the altar every week, I think, well, that's okay, you know. But if I see a pujari who stays with the deity for a long time, then naturally I think, oh, this is very nice. This is really good. Yeah. So that's what we're talking about. Someone who takes a service, and you know, if somebody has distributed books for many, many years, well, I mean, that's something. It's not nothing. That's really something. He did it. He did a big sacrifice. Krishna is pleased with him. So I see Krishna also. So this means Krishna. And Krishna likes the service. He's pleased with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, shall we...
The first question is, what does our spiritual master himself think of it? Because sometimes we are perceiving things in a particular way, and the spiritual master may perceive things quite different from us. So that's one question I would have. So we should not just have our own idea, but we should also see, well, how does my spiritual master himself see this before we start to react too much, think offensive to my spiritual master.
Yes, when opinions become offensive to Guru, Krishna, or the Vaishnavas, or the teachings of the Vaishnavas, then it's a different matter. Then we start to respectfully take a distance and say, this Vaishnava, if it's a Vaishnava, then we start to say, well, this Vaishnava appears to be a little confused. This Vaishnava now, it seems to be, for the moment, in spite of all the nice service he's done, in spite of everything, just a little problem here. And, well, we take a little
you start keeping a distance, and if it gets too extreme and he just doesn't stop and he begins like going on, then we are sometimes forced to speak up against it.
Mind you, once we get into confrontations with Vaishnavas, it can become quite unpleasant, and I've over the years also done that a couple of times, like serious ones, right, where I really seriously came into a disagreement with senior Vaishnavas and so on. I had strong different opinions, and it came to confrontations, and we involved many other Vaishnavas in the disputes, and they and the other Vaishnavas passed a judgment, and it was even favorable on my side. But then years later, I'm thinking about like, well, I don't know if I was that right. Years later, I start to think that, well, maybe I should have done it differently. Maybe it wasn't actually the best. So these things go very deep and very sensitive, and thus one must be careful with it, entering into confrontations with Vaishnavas. But sometimes, so the first step is, let's try distance. Second step is if confrontation is inevitable. All right, so be it, but beware. Offenses can be made on both sides. It's not that if you repay an offense with an offense that you are freed from the offense because the other one threw the first stone. No, your stone also counts. Yeah, so it's just tricky. All that I'm saying, confrontations with Vaishnavas are always sensitive and must be dealt with very, with great care. And even bear with respect. But sometimes we do see that a Vaishnava temporarily develops some idea, a bit too strong. Now, take the Ritviks, to name an example. You know, they are so convinced of their right, and then sometimes they are obnoxious, right? And they push it in our face. Well, then devotees of ISKCON also got obnoxious in return. You know, some pepper spray in their faces. That goes a bit far. And that goes a bit far. And then there were some, I met some of the Ratiyatra with their back to Prabhupada magazines, you know, and they were in a ring around the Ratiyatra. Anyway, what can you do? It's a free world, and there's a free street, and, you know, there's freedom of opinion in the country, and so they have the right in democracy to express their opinions and so on. So just as we have rights, they have rights. But then they came into our own festival site. Well, then it got too much for me, and I must admit, I threw them out. And I said, go have your own festival, you know. Just do some work for a change, right? Roll up your sleeve, organize a nice, you know, midweek festival. And have a big one, you know. Just collect the money, yeah, and get the permits, and have your own thing, you know. Instead of like parasite. And their view is, no, we're reclaiming for Prabhupada what belongs to Prabhupada, and da 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 da. And I don't care. I said, you're getting out of here right now. I'm not accepting this. Out. So confrontations are sometimes there, right? But some people feel I shouldn't have just gone.
was a great thing.
At the end of my life, I guess it will be on the list, you know, why did you throw these guys out? There'll be a long list of that, things I've done to the devotees. So I'm becoming more careful.
Offense. Well, you know, but between husband and wife, it doesn't count so much. They sometimes call each other words that ordinary people would not use. I've sometimes been called a cold frog in my Grihastha ashram. Not to say, I didn't take that as an offense. But maybe I was a cold frog. I do. But even there, there are limits. There are limits. Like in everything. The Prabhupada says that the Kodi Chalakya Pandit, that the fight between a husband and a wife is not taken very seriously. It begins with a lot of noise and then it's a lot of.
Aside from Prabhupada's mistakes compiling the Bhagavatam imperfectly, do we have a prerogative to examine Prabhupada as a product of cultural, sociological, and national terms?
Yeah, I don't like that so much myself to do that. No, I think we can understand that there are two sides to Prabhupada. Yeah, I mean, Prabhupada liked kachoris. If you don't like kachoris, it doesn't mean that you are a demon. Yeah? If you are Italian and you just like pizza better than kachoris, what can be said, you know? That's just a conditioning. So there were some tastes that Prabhupada had, you know, like the example of kachoris, that are in a way material. And there's a material side to everyone. Right? So not that everyone has to love kachoris. But of course we especially like kachoris because Prabhupada liked kachoris. Like to tell you the honest truth, kachoris, they're okay, but it's not like wow, kachoris. Sometimes for me, you know, sometimes. When Vibhu Chaitanya used to make kachoris in Vrindavan, they were like incredible. But most people kachori that not that good. I probably really like kachoris, maybe the good ones. But on every festival dedicated to Prabhupada, we go for the kachoris, right? Because we know that Prabhupada loved them and that's the mercy is there. So it's very hard, you know, to separate the two. And I don't think we want to try too much, you know, to separate. We just accept Prabhupada, and everything about Prabhupada is just very, very nice. It's inspiring, it's purifying. With him, we kachoris, with him, we do things the way he did, the way he liked. And the more we just take shelter of that, because Prabhupada's purity comes through everything, even his likings, his kachoris, which are preparations that Krishna likes. Right? So even his material likings are exalted. Even our material likings, although within the pure four regulated principles, are of a different nature than Prabhupada's whole nature is so exalted.
Well, you can see that in every person there is a spiritual and a material side. And just as we were speaking about the mistakes, that was on the material side of the person. A limited memory. Yes, of course. I mean, sometimes Prabhupada makes a sloka in a mistake in a verse, you know. It's like, hey, that's, who does? Yeah. Who doesn't, you know? I mean, he had a memory like everyone else, which had limitations, right? So that's not a problem to live with that. We don't have to over-idealize that.
Sometimes Prabhupada would take moral instructions from Chanakapadya, Chanakapadya, and he would place them in the Bhagavatam.
Yeah.
And for example, he would say that this example that the war, actually, argument between husband and wife shall be dismissed.
Yeah.
Has no significance. But then someone said, well, that's a cultural particular adaption which Prabhupada made. But nowadays, you know, divorce is something that is acceptable. So we can disregard Prabhupada's judgment.
It's like, keep on making your noises, you know. But we don't want to hear all these products of the small brain.
Yes.
No. Prabhupada is a giant, right? A devotional giant, right? And we are little dwarfs. So, what is this? You know, the dwarf judging such a giant. You don't want to hear this kind of reasoning. So say politely, no thanks. Very good. Not so. So good. Don't bother. Not interested. Now, let's be like very chaste, proper. Do it the proper way. It's so nice. Just not forget our love for Prabhupada. See, I mean, I think there's a little love lacking there. You know, maybe we accept Prabhupada as the founder of Acharya, ISKCON, blah, blah, blah. But we need a little love. We need to develop some love for Prabhupada. Everything about it. Amazing. Because if one gets too intelligent, then Bakasura, that was Bakasura, he was so intelligent that he loved to hear his own quacking. And that's why he took the form of a duck. He was like, he was one who was very attached to his own views and so on, his own philosophy. Thus he took the form of a duck trying to swallow Krishna. Quack. Finished.